Welcome to the Level Up Show with Nick Lopez. Today, I have a great friend and partner on the show, Nick Sheehan. Nick, welcome.
Thanks, Nick. I'm excited to be on the show today.
Let's go. Nick, so you and I go back now a few years. We met in 2019?
19, yeah, right before COVID, year before COVID, yep.
Or was it 2018?
Actually, I think it was we met in 2018, and then I think we officially really started to get serious about what we would do with Lime in 2019.
2019, yep. So what is that?
Almost probably four years, getting close to it.
Getting up there, Nick.
I know. I'm 40 now, man. I was in my 30s. You were in your 20s. Crazy.
Yeah, back when we met, you were encouraging me not to share that I was 29.
Yeah, that's just, right. Yeah,
just don't say your age until you're 30.
That's right.
Oh, that's great. Oh my gosh. And you've been such a instrumental strategic partner, but mentor, friend, coach, peer. And it's really been just an honor that our paths have come together.
I would agree. Equal to what you just said about me, I say about you. It's been a great partnership and friendship, and the journey we've gone through so far has been pretty awesome. So,
yeah. Yeah, I always share with our franchise partners that I love working with you because you help them in a very similar context as how you help me. When I do my due diligence and considering working with St. Gregory and eventually became a client and they were sold, but my gosh, that led to what is now the Repham Group. And you're one of the partners with the Repham Group. And so one of the things that I have been able to do is grow confidently in my partnership with the Repham Group. So yeah, Nick, so we go all the way back to your previous company that you were with, St. Gregory, to you now founding Repham. That's been a really neat journey. But before that even became reality, you had shared with me, hey, I'm probably going to be starting my own thing. And for me, it was a no-brainer, right? And what you've been able to do with the team at Repham, I'm sure was a vision in your mind, right? And from my standpoint, being a partner, to see that all come into fruition, it's just been a real blessing, honor. I've had a lot of fun. And most importantly, I've made some really awesome friendships.
Yeah, well, I appreciate all of that. And yeah, it was in my head whether I could pull it off and make it a reality was the big question. I had confidence that I could, but I think what's really cool is you've been able to see it from literally month one, right? Because you came on board in February and we started Repham in January. So 30 days in, you signed and came with us and partnered together, and you've seen it from inception quite literally. So
yeah, it's been an honor to be a part of that. And yeah, so clearly, the Repham Group has a special group. And so I'm curious, what got you into franchising? How did you get into franchising?
Well, I always say this. There's a lot of people that go to school to go in financing. They want to be an accountant. They want to be a lawyer. No one goes to school for the most part and says, I want to be in franchising. We all get into it by accident somehow, some way along the way. My accident happened in college. So I was getting my MBA. Which surprisingly, I somehow did get that, but I was going to get my MBA. And one of my colleagues told me, hey, we have this speaker tonight, and he's an entrepreneur and he's owned 12 businesses. He's in his 70s. He's going to talk about entrepreneurship. And I love entrepreneurship. I did everything from selling golf balls on the side of the ninth green as a kid and washing cars, shoveling driveways, all that stuff. So it's kind of in my DNA. But I met this guy, long story short, and he had owned a lot of different businesses, super successful. And he was a guy from Brooklyn, New York, Jewish guy from Brooklyn. And just, I talked to him after class about, I actually had a boat washing, airplane washing business in college with a friend, car washing business. And I asked him, hey, very simply, how can I get more customers while I'm doing this in college? He gave me some advice. My dean called me in the next day and said, hey, he was impressed with you. He wants to meet you for lunch. So my buddy and I went and met him for lunch at his country club. And I'll never forget this. He said, you see this nice golf course outside, Nick? And I said, yep, I do. He's like, I don't like to play golf very much. I think it's a great sport, but what I like is business. And if you'd come here once a week, I'll introduce you to a lot of great business owners. And all these guys, these older guys came. I feel like I was at a grumpy old men set, but it was great. I mean, one guy was like CEO of Sealy Posturepedic. I literally met the co-founder of Home Depot. It was pretty cool. And so I just started going there. And then he said, hey, one day there'll be a business opportunity that hits my table. And if you want to run with it with me, I'll let you run with it. And you can still go to school and all this stuff. So I was a 22-year-old kid and he said, sure. So the business that came on his desk was the ink and toner recycling business back in 2004 and five when people printed more still. And I said, hey, these guys in Fort Lauderdale are refilling these ink cartridges and toner cartridges. Do you know anything about that? I'm like, well, I have a printer, so I guess I do. He's like, why don't you go check it out? So I went and checked it out and they were refilling these things and then sending them out to businesses. And they were getting orders for like $1,000 an order from law offices and all this stuff. So I started looking at it. He's like, do you think you can sell this stuff? And I'm like, I don't know. I'll try. So I started knocking on door to door. I was like a Xerox salesman. So what I did in South Florida. And fast forward 3 months into it, I had sold like $60,000 worth of ink and toner. And he's like, well, maybe it's a real business. Let's see. Let's keep doing it. So kept doing it. We started doing B2B business, started building accounts, created a name that was super original, Cartridge Depot, and created a price list and all this stuff. So started doing that and it really worked. And we turned it into a $500,000 a year business in about 18 months. And then he had some franchising experience with a brand called Rent-A-Wreck, which was a car rental business. And they had about 500 locations, which was one of his businesses. He said, maybe we should try to franchise it. So we opened a retail store in Boca Raton, Florida, worked. And then they were from Baltimore. I'm from New York. So he's like, hey, do you want to move up to Baltimore for a little, open another location where my family business is? And I said, sure. So I did that, moved up there and we opened another location. And then a year later, we franchised it. And then I learned all about franchising from that. And I sold the franchises. I trained, hired people to help me with that. And fast forward 5 years into it, we had 35 franchisees and wound up, I had owned 25% of the business and we wound up selling it. So it was a good inception and springboard. The other thing that he told me is this will be a springboard. You won't even remember this business. The difference is I do remember it clearly, but that was my way into franchising. So kind of by accident.
Wow. That's such an awesome story of just good old entrepreneurialism.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And it's right.
Nick, so in your career, what do you think is probably the most surprising thing about franchising that you didn't know before getting into franchising?
So two things. If you're from an outsider's point of view, the first thing that people think about franchising is everything is food, McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, whatever. So I didn't realize how big franchising is outside of food. So that was a big revelation for me. Two is how big the industry is. There's over 4,000 franchisors in this business, but how small it is at the same time. I mean, the camaraderie of which I've been able to build, partnerships, friendships. I know other industries probably have something similar. I just don't believe it's the same. It's just such a great industry to be in. And it really is like a fraternity or sorority that you've built over the years. And it's a pretty cool thing. So I just didn't recognize that until I got into it.
Yeah, the franchise family.
That's right. That is exactly right.
Yeah. So you've done all these different things in franchising. I know you are a multi-unit owner with CycleBar. How many locations do you own with CycleBar?
I have 13 now. I've owned as many as 15.
Yeah. So clearly you've done some really amazing things in franchising. How do you help people level up through franchising?
So there's a couple of ways. I think it depends if it's someone who I employ or it's a franchisee. So I'll give you two answers. When it comes to a franchisee, I think the way that I help them level up is seeing their potential and what they can achieve. Because most people who buy franchises have a lot of fear coming into that process. And second is most are what I like to call corporate refugees, right? People that are corporate America through and through, have never really owned a business before, and it's very foreign to them. So they think franchising is a good vehicle. Now they come in incredibly excited, but then as it becomes more of a reality, the fear really creeps in. And what I always call that is false expectations appearing real is what fear stands for. And oftentimes it comes true when you're going through the process. So what I try to do is just help them understand it's not that scary. Yes, entrepreneurship's like a roller coaster, but that's part of the fun. And if you have a good partner and franchisors, if you pick the right one, are for sure the partner that you want to help guide you along the way. It isn't that much more different than if you just get a new job. You're going to be scared. You're not going to know what you don't know. And you're going to learn it along the way and get better at it. And so it's just helping them see that vision that don't be so scared of the unknown. The only reason you're really fearful is because you haven't experienced it before. And if you look back at what you've done in your career, Mr. Candidate or Mrs. Candidate, you're probably not scared of accounting if you've been an accountant for 10 years, right? Because you know it. And so it's just getting them to see that. And then the last thing is understanding the freedom that will come along the way if they actually do this. I've been an employee before in my life, and I'll never, ever, ever go back to doing that. It's just because the freedom of entrepreneurship is powerful. And so it's just getting them to see that, I think. Second is employees. I think that the thing I've always tried to express is just being coachable, right? Helping people level up by, number one, really owning their craft, whatever that may be. And what I've always found is I have to be better as a company than they are. And I don't mean that by like, I'm a better person. I mean, my system has to be developed for their success. If I can't get what an employee, what they want and hit their goals, I'm going to lose as an employer, right? I'm going to lose them. They're going to go on and move on to another company or something. So my mindset's always to build really strong culture, but it's also to build processes so that when someone comes in, it's not them that's the problem. If it's not working, it's us. Because I have a firm belief that 95% of the reason people fail in a job is for lack of guidance or communication from leadership. And so I've always taken that mindset of helping people level up. How do I do that? Make me better as a company, right? To help them level up. Because if the company levels up, they naturally are on that boat and rising tide raises all ships, right? And so that's always been the way that I've focused as an employer or a company owner.
Yeah, really stewarding that responsibility of giving people on the team the resources, tools, empowerment, direction that they need to be successful, own their career, and level up.
Yeah. And you said it, one thing I forgot, and it's so important, is I don't want to be a babysitter. I'm not hiring kids. I'm hiring adults. No one needs to micromanage people. People that micromanage people, in my opinion, they don't have security in their own self that these people are going to do their job. You give people enough rope and you let them do their job, they're going to prove it either that they're going to do the job because you'll see the results from it, or they won't. But don't micromanage them. It's just going to get them frustrated. So I've always found to let them do their job and they're either going to sink or swim on their own.
Yeah. And that really lines up with get it, want it, capacity, right? Is it the right fit? I mean, sometimes that's not always known. There's scenarios, but my goodness, when somebody gets it, want it, has the capacity, yeah, they need to be empowered. The momentum, the compounding, the ownership of their craft, that's the magic, right? That's where the magic happens. Yeah. The game has to matter and you have to be able to win, right? That's all we want.
That's all we want. Win. Got to put the ball in LeBron's hands and let him win the game.
Nick, was there a point in your career where you really leveled up?
100%. So I'm a victim of just any other human. I had a lot of fear and anxiety when I really wanted to step out and be an entrepreneur fully. And it was on my mind for a long time. I started out of college, then I worked for someone, went back to entrepreneurship essentially. But I think the fear was because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I loved franchising and entrepreneurship, but I didn't have enough experience to understand it fully at that point in my 20s. And so I think the catalyst for me was when I joined St. Gregory, turning point, whatever you want to say. It really changed my mindset. And the word level up is a very telling word to use for that company at that time. They were just a startup when I started 2 years in. And the trajectory I saw was two or three brands that they had as just sales contracts, essentially, that we were selling for in the fitness space and beauty space, to becoming a franchisor with CycleBar. We created that brand from scratch, to launching in the next 5 years that I was involved with that company, 15 to 20 different franchise concepts. And we would launch 5 a year. And we went from awarding probably 10 licenses a month to 150 at times. And so I just saw so much growth. And I saw emerging brands go from, hey, we have 5 locations to 500 locations. I saw 4 private equity flips. I saw us flip the private equity and create this thing called Exponential Fitness, which is now a conglomerate of CycleBar and 9 other brands that make up the largest boutique fitness concept in the world and a publicly traded company. So I experienced all of that. And so I always say I had a crash course in the 5 years that I was there that most people will never get the opportunity to. And frankly, you can't get it now because the franchise development game has evolved and they were the ones that really paved the way for what it is today. And I just got to go along on that ride as I was chief development officer there. And it was a great journey. So it helped me level up on so many levels. But the biggest thing was, I just don't have any fear anymore. My fear is, I mean, I'm like any other person. I will get butterflies in my stomach when I start a new business and I get anxiety and all the other things that we all get. But I don't have fear that I'll make it work somehow, some way. Might not have the answer today and what that looks like, but I learned that you just got to go through it. You got to live through it and you just got to keep pushing forward. Because at the end of the day, there's only 2 things that are guaranteed in life, death and taxes. I always say that. And it's a morbid thing to say, but it's true. And anything else is just, you just got to move through it. And I'd like to say by the time I'm retired, which maybe I never will, but maybe by the day I die, then I have done everything humanly possible in entrepreneurship to level up and help other people level up. Because it's really not about me, because I know I'll get what I get when I help other people level up. So that's the most important thing. But that was the big moment for me when I was able to get to that next level and really see how big franchising is and become a part of that elite part of franchising, right? Which is franchisors that get to 100, 200, 300, 500, 1,000 locations, which is less than 10% of franchising.
Yeah. So clearly, St. Gregory helped you to level up and was not only career, but life defining and set you on a totally different trajectory.
That's right. 100%.
Well, let me just say, I'm grateful that our paths cross.
I am as well. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's been really neat to see your talents and character on display. And I think you and I hit it off right from the beginning just because of our values.
Yeah.
And I've seen you be consistent with the things that you've said and you've done. And my gosh, you've really done some amazing things. And I'm sure in your eyes, you're just getting started.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope I just keep continue to grow and do more things that I can't even see today. That's my goal.
Yeah, Nick. Well, thanks, man. I want to honor you for all the commitment and work ethic and grind and hustle that makes you who you are. It makes franchising better. And I'm glad to be a partner and to know you. And so with all of that being said, Nick, what has created your passion? This passion that has led to all these amazing things?
Well, one, I'd start with just building blocks. I love building companies. It is a passion of mine. I like to see things that are a germ of an idea that turns into maybe this could be a business, to turns into let's try this, to turns into wow, look what we're creating. And then the final level is kind of where we've gotten to where Repm is this is a extremely fast-paced growing business. And it's awesome to see that. The other thing I like to see is the growth of people. That's a huge passion for me. As I said a little bit earlier, I just love helping people. It's just in my nature. And if I can help people get ahead in their career, buy a business and be successful as an entrepreneur or whatever that may look like, that's what I really am passionate about. And developing relationships. I love meeting people, new people, different walks of life, different business opportunities. It's cool to hear people's story. So those are the things that keep me going day in and day out, is really understanding that. And again, just helping people is really, at the end of the day, that's really the source, like building businesses and helping people. I love those two things. And it makes me want to get up and be more passionate about building more businesses and helping more people.
Yeah. And I've heard you talk quite a bit about relationship-based franchising. And that is the core of franchising, the power behind the collaboration. You just can't get that in many spaces. The independence and freedom, the innovation that happens from business owners being in business together, that is people.
It is people. And everyone has to sign contracts. I like to be a handshake guy. I wish you could go back to those days of handshake deals. Doesn't work that way, the world we live in. Lawyers have changed that, right? But I always look at franchisors that manage their business through the contract, one way or another will burn themselves just at some point or another. I think franchisors that live and breathe by the relationship and how do we move forward to make sure that everyone's successful is really the key. And that's really relationship-based franchising, because you're not pulling the contract out and saying, well, this is what this says. You're not doing that, right? And that's, I think, if one thing I've learned with the best franchisors I've ever been a part of is that. That's how they manage it. They've got to keep the system consistent, right? So you got to have those contracts, but they're not looking at it from a day-to-day basis on how they help their franchisees meet or exceed their goals.
And everybody's has the same objective, deliver maximum value, right? Under, yeah. Like, for example, here at Lime, as Lime Painting, unifying as the Lime fam to level up around delivering value in the marketplace.
Right. Yep.
That is at its core collaborative, innovative, and filled with leveling up. Otherwise, in the marketplace, you won't be providing the most value for very long, right? So constantly innovating and adapting to the market to continue to provide that same level of value.
So true. Yep.
It is collaboration at its core. So Nick, what do you think are the two things that make a brand successful?
Well, the first thing has to be there no matter what. Unit economics. If the business doesn't make money, I always say it doesn't make much sense. They've got to have solid foundation. And what I tell emerging franchisors is whether you have 3 locations or 20 locations as an emerging concept, your locations need to be making money. Now, there's variation to that, right? Each location is going to be a little different, but it has to match what your initial investment is, the potential return, to really compete against franchisors that have that similar investment and similar potential return. That's the number one thing. If that's there, then there might be something to franchise. If you don't have that, don't franchise your business, right? I would say the second thing comes down to two things. One is, do they have a differentiator in whatever space they're in? Nick, you and I talk about this all the time. You're in an age-old space. Painting is nothing new, but you're doing something different. You've created a new path and a niche, and white space is available for Lime because you're focusing on the high-end home value that really nobody else is laser focused on like you are, and other services you offer, obviously. So one is having that white space either in an age-old business that you're changing the way things are being done or finding a niche in there in that market. Two is you're paving a new way in a market that doesn't exist in franchising, right? Something that either has not been scaled or B, just hasn't been franchised, which is a little bit more rare, but I've seen that a few times. When we launched Cycle Bar, there was no spin indoor cycling, I'll say, in franchising. There was corporately owned Soul Cycle and what have you, but nothing in franchising. So those are the things that I think I would say my answer to that is.
Love it. And lastly, what advice would you give to a new franchise owner?
Well, first thing is, before you become a franchisee, is I firmly believe that most people that look at franchises don't know what they want. They first look at what they see. I want to own Dunkin' Donuts. That's great, but that might not match your investment level, what you really want in business, and maybe what you want to earn and really what you want to do with your life, right? So I always say that you can research it on your own, but if you hire a franchise consultant, I think there's a lot of value there. It's a free service to you. Just like if you hire a real estate agent to help you find homes. But what franchise consultants do will spend the time with you to really get to know the you, what you want, what you can afford, what your personality matches, and so on. And so it really helps eliminate things that you shouldn't be looking at. So I think that has values. Do the research up front, hire a consultant that's an expert, to help you really define what you're looking for. Then you find brands, because what that'll do is define what you want, but also they'll match you with concepts that are good concepts, that have good backing, have good leadership, and a good industry with good unit economics, because you don't want to get involved one that doesn't have those things, right? So it's mitigating your risk by doing that. And then the other thing is, if you, once you buy the franchise, let's say you move forward with one of those, follow the system. I think the biggest thing that I see that is a issue with franchisees is they come in to a system and they want to recreate. And that's not necessarily a horrible thing down the line to help a system grow and get better as a system. But when you're new and you've never done whatever businesses you're buying, don't try to reinvent the wheel. Stay within the guardrails of the system. Put your head down, follow the playbook until you are successful. What I mean by that is you're profitable and you've hit the unit economics that's anticipated with the brand amongst other franchisees that have already done that before you. And once you do that, that's when you can start innovating inside the system. I always use the example of the biggest one everyone knows or doesn't know where it came from, but is an interesting story, is McDonald's Big Mac was not invented by McDonald's. It was invented by a franchisee who was playing around with some things in the kitchen and figured out what to build the Big Mac. And so those things come out of franchising, but that's the most important thing, is making sure you pick the right one, hiring a franchise consultant, in my opinion, to help you there. And two is putting your head down and following the system. Even if you think there's something to be changed, don't change it now. You're not there yet. You haven't proven your success as a franchisee. So those are the things I'd say are important.
Yeah, it'd be like starting a McDonald's, opening a McDonald's and creating the Big Mac and focusing on that from day one.
Yep.
Right. Whereas the reality was that Big Mac was created from an operator, an owner that executed on the business. And from that came innovation, the Big Mac.
Right.
Such a fundamental, but important, and really the blocking and tackling of being a successful franchise owner. What sage advice from Nick Sheehan. Brother, I appreciate you. Thank you for being on the show. And if you've enjoyed, please like, comment, share. And as always, get lime.
Thanks, Mr. Lopez. Appreciate it, man.